Welcome to Smith Weekly Discussions, an occasional program for our members of Smith Weekly Research. Please note this program is a private discussion and everything contained herein is for entertainment and educational purposes only. With that, we hope you're in a comfortable position, along with your favorite beverage, to enjoy the discussion. We remind our audience to examine our show notes attached to each of our shows to better understand how our program functions. Before we get into our discussion, we want to say thanks for questions coming from the audience of Smith Weekly, including Todd W., Jackie A., Matt S., and Mike P. On the program today is a returning guest. Mr. James Sykes is back with us. James is the Chief Executive Officer of Baseload Energy. The company is focused on uranium exploration in the Athabasca Basin, including advancing the Hook-Accio project, which has an existing discovery, among other exploration projects. Baseload Energy is listed on the Toronto Venture Exchange under the symbol FIND, as well as on the U.S. OTC markets under the symbol BSENF. Jim, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Always a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. It's been a while since we've chatted, and pleasure to have you back on the program. Well, how about we jump right to the market first? Why don't you give us your thoughts here on the uranium market in regard to current events, and then we'll jump into the company in a few moments.
Yeah, I've learned everything I can about the markets from people who have been in the markets for 40 plus years, and they're all saying the same thing, that this is the hottest uranium market they've ever seen in their careers. This is coming from people on the trade side, people within the exploration industry, within the mining industry. Everybody's saying this is by far the best uranium market they've ever seen. Everything's looking positive. You know, growth, the demand side of things continuously grows on an annual basis, and yet supply remains dwindled and almost non-existent. That gap, that disparity continues to grow, and there's no foresight for when that might start leveling out, and when we might start seeing the supply-demand side become equivalent. Until that happens, we'll continue riding this bullish uranium wave, and it does have the legs to be quite sustainable over a long duration instead of a small window.
A lot of conditions where first you just have some big question marks spread over a lot of areas of the sector, and then of course everything takes time. There's significant lag in things like the term market, which people have to get used to, which we've been used to. We've been here long enough and have paid attention to the great capacity that we have over the last, you know, call it 7 years or so. That 8 years really. And so you have all those factors to weigh in. And then of course you have the broad market factors, which also weigh on this market or weigh on the junior natural resource sector period. And we all know that when the markets get nasty on the broad end of things, that these little equities could get creamed irrespective of, you know, even company specific success or underlying fundamental and conditions in the uranium market. So I appreciate your comments there and definitely excited here. We like to see a little bit of pain. It's always good as part of the process. And I think we're in a little bit of a painful moment for some people, not us, but certainly we've read and seen some of the pain from others. And so it's always good to continue here and just yet another bump in this uranium road, which we've seen lots of bumps over the last 8 years. Everything looks good here on our side as far as how we're approaching this and our positioning. How about we move on to the fact that there's some new audience here at Smith Weekly that are listening in and probably new folks since we last spoke, Jim. But how about you just kick it off with a quick overview of Baseload Energy for that new audience?
Yeah, for sure. Baseload Energy is uranium exploration up in northern Saskatchewan's Athabasca Basin area. Myself, I've been in the industry since 2006, uranium exploration, and I've been part of a number of big discoveries, over 550 million pounds of discovery to my name directly and indirectly, including NextGen's Arrow discovery. And so with all of that history behind me, I started working on a thesis that I brought over to the Baseload group, and we kind of kicked it off and launched the company in June 2020, and that we're looking for near-surface, high-grade, open-pittable style of uranium deposits, because in this jurisdiction, those are the ones that go into production from discovery into production within a 6 to 12-year time frame. Unlike a lot of these other deposits that are underneath hundreds of meters of water-saturated sandstone that cause nothing but engineering nightmares and pose health and safety risks should these things ever flood again. But a lot of those deposits were discovered 40 odd years ago, 50 odd years ago, and they're still not in production. So there's a difference in the deposit, I guess, in the engineering and what's economic. Not just because something's high grade does not mean it's economic, not in the long shot. So we've identified that and we said, well, let's not make a discovery, let's discover a mine. And I think that's our fundamental difference approach to how we view things and how we execute our programs and just really moving forward.
Very well. And Jim, why don't we move into capital structure here and then we'll dive into some other stuff. But on capital structure, update us on where we are with shares outstanding at this point, cash, and also major shareholders, including yourself and management.
Yeah, we've got about 133 million shares outstanding, about 42 million in warrants and options, so close to 170, 180 million fully diluted, $40 million market cap. We know we've got a lot of room to grow on that, so that's very positive. I do think that we're at discount prices, to be honest. We're a fully cashed up company, which is very rare in this space. We have about $20 million in the bank. About 15 million of that is all in flow through. 12 of that 15 has to be spent by December 31st of this year. So that it's a great problem to have. We have to explore $12 million, and that means we are focused on the drill rig all year. We're burning about anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000 per month. So our capital side of things is quite low, and we can keep the lights on in the company for a number of years. So we have no issues on that front either. And fully cashed up, great situation. And as far as the major institutional owners, there aren't really any. We have a diverse institutional following. Insiders own about 10% of the company, and that's broken down into 2 to 3% management side, and then 7 to 8% with a sister company, QC Copper and Gold, who vended the vehicle for us when we did our CPC listing. And then with Sprott ETF, they also own about 10% of the outstanding shares. All of that was purchased on the open market. None of that was a corporate deal. So I think we're in good hands. We've had a last few placements we have had a long-term institution come in specifically, and we're very happy to have them on board with the company too.
Talk a little bit about the cash here. Obviously, you guys have commitments on exploration expenditures that need to be done this year for flow through. But just talk about cash position here in terms of you guys being able to, if you had to, obviously there's lots of things that can happen like news and other events in the market that could cause you to raise more capital. But if you didn't have to raise any capital, do you see that this carries you easily through to the first quarter of 2025?
Easily, absolutely. We've got no issues with having the funds to get into 2025. Depends what we want to do this year. We're going very heavy into exploration this year. That will be one of our main focuses. We know the market is hot. We know investors are looking at the space. A good example is Kanalaska's recent discovery, or their recent drill hole hit. Absolutely phenomenal results, and they saw a 50% premium uptick within the day of that news. So we know that the market is aware of uranium. They're looking for the good stories to come out, and we're really pushing hard for baseload to be that story with a new discovery. If there is a new discovery, then obviously would probably have to raise more and just pound it out as best as possible. Not a guarantee that that's what would happen. Depends on what we do find. But with the programs that we have already scheduled and laid out, that will definitely take us into the end of the year. We did an additional raise earlier this year for another $6 million, and that provides us with just a security blanket that if we need to go over budget on anything, that we can dip into that. That 6 million is not specific for 2025. That is to help out this year's drill program, but leave enough behind for going into 2025. We're putting a large emphasis on our Catharsis project this year, which we are currently drilling. We originally were looking at 2,000 meter drill program, but we loved what we saw, so we've increased it to 4,000 meters. And that's kind of one of those. Catharsis is basically our winter only project. It's just the way we like to diversify the projects and shift focus. So to be honest, if we're not successful on Catharsis this year, then that provides us with an opportunity to not go back next year. And so we can defer our cash into our major asset, which is the Accio discovery.
And I want to come back to Catharsis in just a moment, but talk about that bought deal that was wrapped up in February. Just talk about who led that, how you guys were able to put that together, because that's a pretty good sum.
It was a Red Cloud bought deal. It was an interesting thing that shareholders really didn't like. They didn't appreciate because we had completed a raise back in November, December of last year, in which we raised just over 9 million. And we said that we were cashed up. But through the month of December and January, we started seeing prices increase on every little thing. Food was going up, gas was going up. Our drill contractor and helicopter contractors came back and said they're increasing prices. So within those months, we started reallocating funds and adjusting meterages on planned programs and removing some geophysical surveys that we still believe we needed to get done. And then we weren't looking for any additional money. We were going to move forward with what we had, but this deal honestly came across our laps, and we thought that we're raising at a premium, at a higher premium than past previous raises over the last 12 to 24 months. So it was a great thing to avoid dilution in that sense. And it was $5 million bought deal. It was increased to 6 million, and we were very happy to take it. There's, the old saying, take the money when it's there. We've witnessed that firsthand, that you can have those funds can be there one day, and then the next day they're completely evaporated. If we tried to raise that 5 million right now, we wouldn't be able to. Just the markets have already gone away, and it's just like that. It's in the blink of an eye. So we're very happy that we did cash up even further and really supporting our war chest for exploration.
Absolutely. No, this is always a walk on thin ice, and you're absolutely right. Given some of the conditions that could be expected here going forward, it may have made a lot of sense to go ahead and do what you did.
I'm
Now you
sure if
have
we make a
a good.
discovery, all will be forgiven.
It's funny how that happens, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
But it certainly extends the runway here. And again, this capital raising is always very, very difficult, and it's always on thin ice. And so I think people have to understand and respect to some degree some of the various balancing acts that you're having to deal with here on this. So I appreciate you covering that bit off. And why don't we jump right into the drilling program that has just got underway at Catharsis? Go into a little bit more detail here as far as the objectives, the target selection here to punch on this drill program. And what do you expect to get out of this?
Great questions. The main objective is discovery. And that's, no matter what we do, that's always number one on the exploration side of things. We always want to discover more. And Catharsis is a project that, when we had staked it, I received comments from peers and colleagues within the industry, guys who have been in the industry for many more years than I had been. And they all said we were too far south. I said we don't have a chance in hell being that far south. But we saw things differently. We saw the geology of things much differently, and figured that we were closer to where the unconformity would have been. And that's kind of important for uranium mineralization in this area, because there's almost a one-to-one correlation with your Athabasca sandstone and uranium mineralization. But we do believe that Catharsis project at one time was covered with Athabasca sandstone, and it wasn't. And we weren't very deep where we are now. We think that the unconformity was pretty shallow. So as the uranium mineralization event would have occurred 1.5 billion years ago, this project could have been part of that whole scenario. So long as the structure and the fluids were there, then this area could have been mineralized. And then everything gets glaciated, and we are where we are. We're outside of the sandstone, which is great. So we've picked a number of targets. We keep our exploration methodology quite simplistic. It's worked for us many times in the past, myself specifically. We flew a number of airborne surveys, picked our targets, defined them, refined them, and we did a first pass drill program. And I guess it's important to note that this project has never been drill explored ever. It had a little bit of exploration, geophysical exploration, and surface prospecting done back in the 70s, but nothing has been touched since then. We're the first company to come back, did the first drill program last year, loved what we saw. We had two holes out of 8 holes in particular that demonstrated the right type of structures and the right type of fluid movement on the project. One of the structures, which was an oxidized hematite fluid system. We did some additional tests and have found that that fluid system was uranium bearing. So we know that the structures in this area can contain uranium within them, within the fluids. So we didn't want to go back there this year because we knew we'd have to put a few more drill holes in, really trying to figure out if there is mineralization in the area or not. It has all the makings for it, but it would have been a little bit of a trickier play. We want to fast track discovery as much as possible. So we had four targets picked out, one of them also having rare earths associated with it, but it's still a uranium target. And in drilling our first target, within the first three holes, we were hitting alteration and structures that look identical to mineralized structures and alteration that I've seen on other deposits. Our first drill hole, we hit radioactivity, elevated radioactivity within a structural corridor that was right at the right lithological contact where a lot of basement-hosted deposits are typically located. So we followed that up dip, and we lost the radioactivity, which could mean something, but we hit in its place, we hit broad structure, broad alteration. We saw the oxidized fluids coming in, and the oxidized fluids are the fluids that carry uranium with them. It's when those oxidized fluids meet a reduced fluid or reduced environment that uranium precipitates out, and that meeting point between the oxidized fluids and the reduced area is called a redox front. And without a redox front, you're not going to have mineralization. In our third hole, which was up dip from both one and two, again, still no radioactivity, but the structure was far more impressive, and the alteration was just magnificent. Like I said, I could have taken a number of pieces of core from that drill hole and just throwing them onto other deposits, and you'd never be able to tell the difference between the two. The only thing was one has uranium, the other doesn't. What does that actually mean? Especially losing the radioactivity? It's possible that any radioactivity or any uranium-bearing minerals within that are entrained within that structure could have been leached, and they could have been moved elsewhere along the structural system and deposited within a redox front. We did see a lot of redox style of alteration on that third hole. We're seeing the right structures, we're seeing the right alteration, we're seeing fluid movements, and these are brittle structures, so we know that they occur after the mountain belt formed. We know that this is the right environment for uranium deposition. Now we just have to find the exact place. So seeing that in our first target area this year, we said, this is wonderful, we're on the right track, let's increase our meterage, and by doing so, we will increase the amount of targets that we're going to attack this year. Again, because we're in exploration mode, we're in discovery phase mode. We really want to push hard for a new discovery that will change everything for the company, especially given this uranium market right now. So that's the plan moving forward. We will continue to drill off this one target area, drill down dip of the radioactivity, see what's going on down there, and then we'll start drilling on strike of the holes that we just drilled. After that, we'll jump around. Everything's helicopter supported, so that gives us the ability to hop, jump and hop and skip over to target areas without making any impacts on the ground. We can do those moves very quickly. So we'll target anywhere between 7 to 8 target areas now, again, with this hop skip type of approach. Doesn't take much to make a discovery. Usually 1 to 2 drill holes, if the mineralization is there and you're targeting the right area, you can make these discoveries pretty quickly. That's our approach moving forward, at least for Catharsis.
Okay. Obviously, these first programs can be tricky, and you don't really have a lot of confirmation, obviously, without seeing the core. And so there's field adjustment that has to occur. And then also, really, at the end of this particular campaign, you have to look also and make adjustments based on the feedback that you got from the core, essentially, and the results. And so, what is your thought there on that? I know earlier you mentioned that obviously you guys have a dual focus here with Hook Accio and then also with Catharsis. But if the first few holes is going to yield information, but let's just assume you guys don't hit anything of significant note. But of course, this is going to lead you down the investigative path of where to come back and check on the next program. So how do you see that going? of maybe you don't have success on this first program, which most programs, the first ones don't have, but how you can adjust potentially and come back for the next season and maybe try again here with some adjustments.
Yeah, we learn with every drill hole. With every shift that we get drill core from the drillers, we learn almost immediately. That's the trick of it all, right? It's exploration. We're not guaranteed to make a discovery, no matter how good our background is. It's always exploration. If there was always a deposit wherever we drilled, it would be called finding. It would not be called exploration. You can find stats all over the place about how many drill holes does it take to discover an economic deposit. It ranges anywhere from 1 in 10,000 drill holes, 3 in 1,000 drill holes. They're crazy numbers. These are rare discoveries. But because of our experience, we feel that we are very adept, and we're pretty conscientious about how we explore and where we explore. We don't like to waste money. We hate wasting exploration money on useless targets. So we always try to optimize with the best targets possible. Catharsis Project has over 20 drill targets. So if we're not successful this year, that's fine. Then we, again, yes, we use all of that information, we refine, and we start reapplying new information to future target areas. We always wait on the geochemistry to come back as well, because that can really guide us as well. You can miss a lot of things. You can miss uranium deposits by meters and never have any radioactivity in your core. I've seen it, I've witnessed it firsthand. It is a reality. But the thing that cannot escape is the geochemistry. You cannot miss it in geochemistry if you know what you're looking for. That's part of the refining process after drilling. So we're hopeful that we'll make a discovery on Catharsis. We've got some great targets, we've got some wonderful targets, things that need to be drilled. If there's mineralization there, fantastic. If there's not, then that's exploration. We go back to our drawing board and we refine. I'd like to believe that we are smart enough not to sit there in one area and just continuously pump in drill holes and pump in meters on alteration and structure that has no chance of ever hitting mineralization. And that's what you get from us. You get a company that prioritizes wisely. We know when to cut the rope, and we know when to move on to the next area.
Good points to bring up for sure. Appreciate that. Why don't we move over to Hook Accio for a moment, Jim? Talk about the next plans there to advance the discovery at this project, which is already there, and what work you would plan to get done during 2024 with evaluating what the next steps are.
Yeah, I guess before we jump into Hook Accio, we'll kind of go in sequential order. So the Catharsis drill program should be done anywhere between end of March and mid-April. We'll have a short little break, as is typical for the Athabasca area because of a winter breakup. So ice melts, the roads become garbage because of all the snow melting and water on there. And it's typically good to get back up there in May, June. So in May, we'll actually be exploring our Bear project, which, again, never been properly explored in the past. I think the last work done was mid-2000s by Forum. They defined some interesting gravity targets right on what we have defined as, tier one structure. So we'll be investigating some of those drill holes, or some of those target areas, with a 1500 meter drill program starting in May. Also in May, we'll be rebuilding our Hook camp, which supports the Accio project. We were renting a camp previously. The costs were too high after 2 years, so we decided to just build our own camp. And that is our progress for May, along with a ground ANT survey, ambient noise tomography. It's kind of hokey pokey. Some people think that it doesn't work, some people do. We've seen some interesting results out of it from people that I've worked with in the past and I trust 100%. And I think this is a very interesting and unique application. So we'll be running that over Accio and maybe some other target areas on Hook. The purpose for the ANT survey, especially at Accio, is to map out, number one, a lithological contact that is controlling mineralization at Accio. Number two, we're looking to see if we can define the extent of the sandstone that we have in there, and especially follow the fault in the area. And then number three, we want to find the deep controlling structure within this whole area, because we've seen so much alteration that this is not a simple one-off structural event. This is a huge plumbing system that has spewed out fluids for hundreds of millions of years. So typically when you find those, they're very deep structures, and we just want to map the basement of these things, because again, you look at the Athabasca Basin, there are a number of deposits that have been mined historically. Eagle Point comes to mind, a number of Uranium City deposits come to mind. With mineralization, they can trace down to a kilometer depth. Even Arrow has mineralization that traces down to a kilometer. So these things can extend quite a ways down the structures. Once May is all wrapped up and we have our ANT data back and camp is built, then we have one drill dedicated to extending Accio. Accio is continuously growing. Most of the mineralization we've defined is from near surface. Mineralization starting as shallow as 25 meters beneath the surface. I don't think there's many other deposits out there in the world today with that same type of mineralization. And we've traced it down to a minimum 200 meters. The bulk of it's between 25 and 110 meters from surface. Our first drill hole ever in the area pegged mineralization at deeper than 300 meters. So we know that there's a chance for mineralization to continue deeper. We've got a few main priorities at Accio that we need to complete. There's what we call Pod 7, which we put a lot of emphasis on last summer. We grew it in strike length. We doubled its thickness. We intersected Pod 7 at the overburden contact as well. So now we've got two zones with mineralization at the overburden contact. And we're pretty sure that our Pod 7 connects with Pod 4. That creates a zone of mineralization that you can extend from near surface, from the overburden contact, down to deeper than 200 meters. So that's over 200 meters of continuous mineralization. It's a great scenario to have. That pod is still open to the northeast, and as we've continued to drill to the northeast, we have found higher grades of mineralization. So we've got about a 75 meters to 100 meters of undrilled, untested area that has potential for higher grades of mineralization. That is a big priority for us. We'll also be putting in more drill holes into areas that we need to define pods even further so that we can bring them into an indicated category for an NI 43-101 mineral resource. That is the big game plan for Accio for Q4 this year. We want to get that mineral resource done and out. We want to bring it into an indicated category, not just inferred. We want to be that one extra step above and have a little bit more confidence behind what we're seeing. As mentioned, we'll be targeting structure and mineralization at depth. So we'll really be following up the depth potential of Accio. The resource estimate is basically going to be capped at about 200 meters depth. So anything that we find deeper than that, we won't include into this initial resource. We'll leave it as upside potential for down the road. But we initially focused on the low-hanging fruit at Accio. So everything between 0 to 200 meters depth. And that's where our main priority has been. We also think because there's a lithological contact that is controlling a lot of mineralization, we haven't followed that to its full extent to the southern end of Accio. So that will also take some priority drilling for us. And then the sandstone target that we have at Accio. So we do have a little skiff of sandstone. It is a fault-controlled sub-basin that is outside of the main Athabasca Basin. The southernmost drill holes that we've seen that have pierced that sandstone all have geochemical anomalies that are synonymous with uranium deposits that have worked on previously. So we think that there is potential for unconformity mineralization in this faulted sandstone basin. So we'll be putting about 4,000 meters, very prominent. It's a prominent drill program in itself, just into that sandstone, looking for that unconformity mineralization. Why such a big push on that? Why is it so important for unconformity mineralization? Simply because that's typically where you get your high grades. That's where you get your 5%, your 20%. And once you start getting grades like that, you can build up a resource very quickly. Not saying that we have to have mineralization at the unconformity. It's just everything that we're seeing so far just indicates that there should be mineralization in the area. So that's, again, another big priority there. Also in June, so after Bear is done, we will have a second drill coming up to the Hook project, and that will be targeting another 4,000 to 6,000 meters on other exploration targets within the project itself. And that drill, once it's done its exploration, that'll probably be the drill that will do the sandstone targeting. So we'd have two drills back in the Accio area. But as far as Hook exploration, we've got some wonderful targets again. One of them in particular, we've been wanting to drill for a while. We just haven't got around to it. Market wasn't as hot in the last 2 years. Like it's come and gone, come and gone. They've been small windows for the market, but we see the prolonged market existing now. And now is the time to make that second discovery. So one of the key targets that we're going to be chasing is on the same structural corridor as Accio. It's about 15 kilometers south. This structure is a scar on the face of the earth. It is huge. It's a massive structure. So at the very north end of it, you have Accio. At the very south end of it, we have geophysical anomalies that, again, they all overlap, and they match with anomalies that we would typically drill. So hopefully we can have another discovery on our hands along the structure at the southern end of Accio. If we do, then we start building up a hub and spoke type of idea within the Hook project. Very exciting to see all of these drill programs completed and done. I think we've got ample opportunity for discovery success on our hands with each and every single project.
Appreciate you putting that into some sequencing for us, and sounds like you guys have quite a bit of work to do, and news will be flowing this year pretty heavily on various activities and some of the results that are be coming in on this. And I do like as well that you guys are putting a little bit of emphasis behind expanding that deposit and also coming out with resource estimation at this point. I think that that's important as you start to. Obviously, we want to see expansion, but we also want to start seeing some of that work being done to advance the project and eventually start to wrap around some economics on this. So I appreciate that comment there. I do think that that is the right area to start focusing on as well as you guys continue to, of course, do exploration activity as well. One of the things that I think some of the audience are facing as we go here, and of course, we see this increase, and this is natural as part of these cycles develop, but there's an increasing selection of junior exploration stage companies in the basin that investors have to sift through, companies that are popping up on people's screens and into interviews and these various marketing activities that the juniors do. And it's quite a bit of work there to try to sift through and deal with the population density, if you will, within the basin. Talk about a little bit how you see baseload really being set apart from its peers on this front.
Well, that's an easy one. The simplest thing is if people are new to the basin exploring there, you don't need to look any further than baseload. We've got the history, we've got the people behind it, and we're fully cashed up. But what really sets us apart from everybody are two things. Number one, we were early enough to come into the basin to stake what we thought was the most prospective ground. So everyone else who is coming into the basin now, to be honest, a lot of them are just taking up moose pasture. They're getting into the basin just to say, hey, look, we're in the Athabasca Basin. We're exploring for uranium because uranium's hot right now. I don't want to say they're lifestyle companies, but some of them might be. When you get in after everything's already booming and hot, you've missed the window. It doesn't tell me that you're really supportive or strong in that type of industry. But we were early enough. We were one of the first new juniors into the basin before everything took off in 2020. And like I said, we picked up projects that we evaluated using a number of criteria. We were looking at areas that we're looking to avoid major river systems, watersheds, lakes, things like that. We're looking for ease of accessibility so you don't have to go, so you don't have to be 100 kilometers away from infrastructure, roads, and take planes in everywhere. We're looking for projects that we knew would be easier to permit and consult with. Some of the areas in northern Saskatchewan, there are permitting issues and consultations prolong. Our Shadow project is actually one of those projects with prolonged consultation, but all of our other projects have been quite easy to move and and move forward with the with consultation and the indigenous groups. We've actually got working partnerships that are wonderful. We get along really well. So that's one of the things. We had that foresight, but then obviously number two is our Athabasca 2.0 strategy. Nobody does it like we do. We see things differently. As mentioned earlier, we're looking for those near surface, basement hosted, high grade uranium deposits that are amenable to open pit and near infrastructure, near pre-existing mills. There's nobody else doing what we do. We're leaders in this basement style of exploration, and we will continue to do so. If we make a discovery on Catharsis, again, which is about 100 kilometers south of the Athabasca Basin, that transforms the entire Athabasca Basin area. It opens up so much more potential for new discoveries instead of focusing within that sandstone. You'd increase the whole basin range by at least 100 kilometers, 200 kilometers surrounding the basin for potential exploration. That's huge. That's a big thing. And the more deposits like this that we can discover, not just baseload, but all companies in general, it really boons well for the area, for the basin, for Saskatchewan and Canada. So we're happy to be leading part in that effort.
Appreciate that, Jim, and I think that helps people decide a little bit on, hey, there are some additional features here that this company has that maybe your average new junior co startup for exploration in the basin doesn't have. You mentioned just a little bit on community, and that was another area that I wanted to move into was community efforts. Of course, talk about some of those important initiatives that the company is doing to educate, employ, and build the community. Anything you want to mention on that front?
Well, as mentioned, we've got exploration agreements with a couple of Indigenous communities now. We're working on a third one. In particular, with some of those, we are looking to help them establish a business that would support exploration in their area. We know that exploration doesn't just happen on its own anymore. Consultation is definitely a big part of exploration. Always has been in our end anyway. We've been early consultors. We've always consulted before we've ever gone and done any type of exploration, and we will continue to move that forward. But with having these partnerships in place really makes things a lot easier, and it makes the whole dialogue for everything, just planning everything moving forward. We know which areas to go into originally, which areas to not go into. We know where there are some contentious ideas or things that just need to be worked out and played out. But a lot of the groups that we're consulting with, they're pro exploration, very knowledgeable. They've been dealing with Orano and Cameco and just mining in general in the Athabasca for a number of years. So it hasn't been too difficult to educate them on anything. Actually, it hasn't been difficult at all. Just with our shadow project, the one that is still in consultation, that has been much more prolonged than we expected. We know that they're not happy with exploration in the area, despite, a mine going into approval within their historic area. We continue to try and educate to the best of our efforts. A lot of them have worked in the Fort McMurray tar sands of Alberta, and so as soon as you mention exploration or mining, their mind goes to that style of exploration with these massive drill pads that are bigger than buildings and just complete destruction of land in some areas. But because we're helicopter supported, we keep trying to emphasize that like our impact is basically negligible. We can avoid anything. We don't have to put trails in, so we don't have to worry about going over any sensitive areas or environmental areas. Everything is very low key, very low impact, and we can get out of there fast and easy. If we don't like what we see, we could be gone within 2 days. If we do like what we see, then we'll continue consultation. We are trying to progress on every part, on every front. Some things work very well, some things just take a little bit longer.
Jim, I really appreciate that. Always good to cover that area off and progress those efforts. And, education is so important in this day and age. We're just seeing not competent people everywhere, every industry. Nobody's competent, or very little people are competent. And so a lot of people tend to believe that everything they have is somehow manufactured and printed in a lab, and it just shows up and they don't think about it. And the reality is unfortunately, there are certain areas in the world that people just don't have a good education or understanding that really the fact everything that we have comes from the ground, or in some
Exactly.
cases it's grown. But the caveat with the grown stuff is that the fertilizers and the other products that go into the mass production of these crops is yet again mined. It's always good to help the community understand where that telephone really comes from, where that printer comes from, where some of the clothing comes from, the cars, the plastics, the resins, all the different things that we have, including, let's not even get into it because I blew in the face about it, but where does that energy come from, Jim, when you plug a cord into the wall? Anyway, I think every company needs to make an effort to try to educate, because it's in their own interest to. There is responsible mining. It's required. It's needed. Responsible exploration. It's required. It's needed. It also provides capital to these communities in some form or another. Otherwise, they would not have it, because I'm telling you, there's not just a bunch of bird watchers up there that will support a tourist economy. Doesn't work. On strategy for the company overall, look out for us a couple of years, maybe say 3 to 5 years, Jim. Talk about the overall longer-term strategy and goals for this company.
Obviously, exploration, making a new discovery is a big one. And if we do make a discovery, then we continue pushing and trying to develop that as fast as possible. Accio, we continue to push that forward. As mentioned, by Q4 this year, we're hoping to get that NI 43-101 mineral resource out the door. That will initiate us moving down the road looking at PEAs and PFS. So really bullish on that. We've already been doing some test work to help expedite the process before we even have a mineral resource. We've done our mineralogy. We've done leachability tests. We've done preliminary ore sorting tests. So we're adamant that we can move Accio as a mine. We think that it can honestly be mined, and we think that it can all be milled efficiently at the Key Lake Mill. So that will be a big push for us. At some point, we will have to get into some deeper conversations with mill owners and or potential other companies within the area. But as it stands right now, we are pushing everything forward on our end alone. Whether we decide to move it forward on our own, or if we're looking for a JV partner, or if we're looking for a company to take us outright, all of that will be weighed as situations develop. We don't have a strong opinion in any way for these. If this were a large underground mine, then yeah, we'd probably be looking to sell or looking for a partner. But because this is an open pit style of small scale mine, then a potential for an open pit small scale mine, that's something that we feel comfortable that we could probably move on our own. And like I said, we'll weigh things as they come.
So is that balance of, can we move this forward ourselves? Can we work in that direction? Obviously, that requires another set of skills and competency. Or maybe there's enough discovery success that obviously someone wants to come and buy. And we've seen that. We've seen some M&A activity recently pick up in the basin. And I expect there'll be more of that as we go through the rest of this cycle as well. And so very good comments on that front. Well, Jim, why don't we wrap it up there with any final comments? And then let me leave you with this for a response for potential investors who are listening in here. The company has a market capitalization of about $44 million Canadian dollars. Why should Baseload Energy be considered within the institutional, family office, and retail investors portfolio at this stage?
Because we're unique at what we do and we're good at what we do. We've discovered mineralization on our first drill program. And we've got the ability to discover more, not just on one project, but on multiple projects. And this year, with a $12 million war chest for exploration, that makes us probably have some of the largest drill programs in the Athabasca Basin area. And it's only a matter of time, I believe, before we make a discovery. We're at discount share price right now. I honestly believe that we are undervalued. If we do make a discovery, I think we've got nothing but upside potential.
And the best way for the audience to contact the company?
They can reach me via email, jsykes, that's J-S-Y-K-E-S, at oregroup.ca, O-R-E-G-R-O-U-P.ca. You can also email the Baseload website, info@baseload.com. You can follow us on Twitter, I guess that's now X. You can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we do have a number of educational videos. I guess, yeah, I forgot to mention that, eh? That's one of the ways we differentiate ourselves is we really get in depth with how we do things. We like to put out videos along with our news releases, and these videos are meant to bring the investor along the ride. So an investor, if they just read a news release, they're like, okay, they're going to target this area and this is what they drilled. We go much further than that. We go into why we're going to target. We're going to show you exactly what we're targeting in many different ways. And then when as results come in, we describe all of the results in detail. So we like the investors to feel like they're getting something out of their investment and not just waiting around for a discovery. We bring them along the road, along the journey. A lot of positive feedback from all of our videos, so we will continue to do that. I just think that's part of the whole education side of things because it's not just the communities in the area that need to be educated, but it's investors as well. They need to be educated because there's a lot of new investors out there in the uranium space and they don't have a clue what they're looking for. So we try to minimize somebody's investment idea. If they're looking at baseload, those videos are a great way to really understand the company and really understand where we're coming from.
Thank you for that. Well, Jim, look, it's always good to catch up. Appreciate the update on progress at Baseload. Best of luck on the upcoming work that's ongoing, and looking forward to having you back later this year. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to coming back, and hopefully we'll have a discovery to talk about too.